Hey there, this is Laura Kanoi.
Shh!
What? I mean,
what? Loretta Allison here. We're having a secret drive.
Oh, so that means...
Shh!
Oh, got it. If you love the exchange, consider a small donation to the station that makes it.
Go to nhpr.org/support and chip in, and we'll send you some secret swag.
We're trying to keep things quiet, but we hope you'll make some noise for The Exchange.
Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit DartmouthHitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoi, and this is The Exchange. For many months, anger and intra-party fighting defined the Republican presidential race, but now seems to be the Democrats' turn. As Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders continue to compete for the Democratic nomination, their once polite, even collegial campaign has taken a much sharper, bitter tone. There was the recent ugliness in Nevada, which included death threats against the state party chair from some upset Sanders supporters. There's continued confusion and suspicion about how party nomination rules work and who gets to vote and who doesn't. There's arguing about the math around delegates and vote totals. And there are polls cited by both sides making the case that their man or woman is the best one to beat Donald Trump. Today in The Exchange, Democratic disunity, what it represents and what the outcome might be. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests with us in studio as Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH, a fellow at UNH's Carsey School. He's also co-author of the book, The Four Faces of the Republican Party. Dante Scala, always good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us from Hanover, Brendan Nyhan, Assistant Professor of Government at Dartmouth College. He contributes to The Upshot at the New York Times. And Brendan Nyhan, welcome back. Thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us from the campaign trail, Dan Bush, Digital Politics Editor for the PBS NewsHour. Dan, thank you very much for taking time out. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Dante, I'll turn to you first, but want to hear from everybody. What do you make of what we're seeing on the Democratic side?
Well, I think all of a sudden, Republicans are a bit ahead of Democrats, despite all the tumult and controversy on their side, because Donald Trump is now the presumptive nominee. And so Republicans may not be thrilled with that prospect, but they're at least resigned to it. And with that resignation starts to come party unity.
And focus.
I mean, one of the most powerful glues in American politics is political party identification. And it's much like your favorite football team. You root for them no matter who's the quarterback. And the same thing is happening on the Republican side. Whereas on the Democratic side, even though it would be a very far-fetched scenario to see Bernie Sanders as the nominee at this point, there are still contests ongoing. It's still a relatively close contest if you look at the delegate count. And so therefore, with important primaries still on the way, Sanders supporters and Sanders himself, they're not ready to concede at this point. And so the party faithful are at a different stage. They're not at the resignation and unity stage. They're still in the contestation stage. And so the question will be going forward, once Hillary Clinton wraps up the nomination, I really think it's when and not if, will Sanders supporters rally, resign themselves and rally just the way that non-Trump, never-Trump people are slowly getting behind Donald Trump.
Well, and I definitely am going to turn to Dan Bush in a minute to get him to clarify some of the delegate math, because you do hear a lot of that, Dante. You're right. But Brendan, I hint to you first. What are your broad thoughts as a political scientist on what we're seeing on the Democratic side?
Well, I agree with Dante that it's a matter of when Hillary Clinton wraps up the nomination, not if. She's at about 98% in betting markets right now. So this race is effectively over. The question Democrats face is when the party rallies around the nominee. Bernie Sanders has sent different signals about his willingness to play by the party rules and fall in behind Hillary Clinton. So I think there's a lot of worry right now. But at the same time, people had the same sort of worries in 2008, and Hillary Clinton voters were ultimately very happy to back Barack Obama against John McCain. So we shouldn't make too much of the division that exists right now either. Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee for president. It's hard to imagine that the energy Bernie Sanders has excited within the Democratic Party won't get turned, at least in part, to defeating Donald Trump. Despite the superficial similarities on a couple of issues like trade, on almost everything else, his supporters will be hard-pressed to stay home, I think, given that the alternative would be Trump.
Well, and last week on CNN, Hillary Clinton told Chris Cuomo, the interviewer, that based on her experience in 2008, which you just mentioned, Brendan, running against Barack Obama, and that was a long primary, here she is saying that she has every confidence that the party will be unified based on that experience for the general election this time around.
I won 9 out of the last 12 contests. Back in 08, I won Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia. So I know the intense feelings that arise, particularly among your supporters, as you go toward the end. But we both were following the same rules, just as both Senator Sanders and I are following the same rules.
So there she is on CNN talking about that. And I want to turn to you, Dan Bush, to clarify first, please. You know, the race for the nomination, as everybody knows, is a race for delegates. Voters, though, hear that Bernie Sanders has won Indiana, some of the other states, multiple states recently. And then they hear that Hillary Clinton is on a stronger path to win the nomination. So, you know, it's confusing. Can you clear that up, Dan?
Sure. The numbers certainly are very confusing to voters and experts alike. It's a sort of Byzantine process. If you look at the numbers, broadly speaking, without getting too far into the weeds, the Democratic nominee needs to win 2,383 delegates to capture the nomination. Clinton right now is a little bit under 1,800 in pledged delegates. Sanders is a little under 1,500. Pledged delegates, of course, are delegates elected or chosen by the various states to come to the convention, the national convention, excuse me.
So chosen by voters, Dan. I just want to make that crystal clear. Pledged delegates are chosen by voters. They're not the superdelegates that people have heard about.
Well, I mean, it's a state-by-state process. And so in some states, voters have a direct say in choosing the pledged delegates. In other states, the state conventions, state party leaders sort of have more of a say in deciding who those people are. Then, of course, there are superdelegates. Those are party leaders, state chairmen and chairwomen, and so on, who get to decide up until the election who it is that they're going to support. Right now, if you combine pledged delegates and superdelegates, Hillary Clinton is only 90 delegates short of clinching the nomination. And if you look ahead of the calendar, Democrats will be voting in several states starting in June. There's obviously a lot of delegates at stake in California, 546 there, a lot in New Jersey, 142. So bottom line, although Sanders does have a path, as he says, it is increasingly narrow, slim to none at this point. He would need to capture north of 60, 70% of the pledged delegates that are left, which he is not doing. And then on top of that, he would have to essentially get all of the unpledged superdelegates left to back him and then convince superdelegates who have already said they're backing Clinton to back him instead. So while it's possible, as Brendan mentioned, the markets are at 98% for Hillary Clinton. So Sanders' chances of doing this at this point are essentially non-existent.
Well, both of you have mentioned that, Brendan and you, Dan Bush. And Brendan, I'll ask you, what does that mean, markets at Hillary Clinton?
Well, so there are different ways that you can put real money on the line to predict who might win a political contest. And social scientists have increasingly turned to these markets as a forecasting mechanism, as a way of thinking about what the current balance of probabilities is in a given race. These are either abroad where betting on elections are legal, or there's a legalized market now with a certain cap in how much money you can put down in the United States. And so the one I'm looking at is called PredictWise, and they have Hillary Clinton at a 98% chance. So very, overwhelmingly likely to be the Democratic nominee. I think the only scenario that many of us would expect to potentially call that into question would be an indictment in the emails case or something like that.
Well, and let's hear Bernie Sanders talking about this as well. This was just over the weekend, talking on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. And here's Senator Sanders saying, yes, it's a tough path, but he's not willing to give up yet.
Secretary Clinton is jumping the gun a little bit here. Here is the scenario. We understand that we have about 46% of the pledged delegates. In order to get 50%, we're going to have to do very, very, very well in the remaining nine contests. I think we have a shot. It's going to be an uphill climb, but I think we have a shot to do that. We're going to fight as hard as we can for every delegate and every vote. The other point that I would make, George, is that if you look at virtually all of the polls done in the last 6-7 weeks, in every one of them, nationally polls and statewide polls, we defeat Donald Trump by larger margins, in some cases significantly larger margins, than does Secretary Clinton.
So, Dante Scala, a couple points that Senator Sanders raises there. But go ahead, on that last point he made, his campaign's been talking a lot about the poll showing him doing better against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I think there's a valid point in what Senator Sanders says, and a point with a little less grounding. I mean, certainly he's very close in terms of pledged delegates, delegates that he won through votes in caucuses and primaries. So I can understand why he and his supporters would want to fight on just to see what happens, as long as there's a possibility that he could still win, however remote. When you get to the head-to-head polling, though, in the general election, one thing that Senator Sanders doesn't mention is that he has faced very, very little in the form of negative advertising or attacks, either from the Republicans or from his chief opponent, Hillary Clinton. I mean, we saw that in the run-up to the New Hampshire primary, for instance. I mean, very positive campaign all the way through. So one question that I imagine superdelegates are thinking about on the Democratic side is, well, yes, Sanders is faring better than Clinton in head-to-head polls versus Donald Trump, but how will Senator Sanders look after tens of millions of dollars in negative advertising that Republicans have waiting for a potential nominee, Bernie Sanders, that just haven't played yet?
What are you hearing about that, Dan Bush?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a good point. And although Sanders is up in polls now, it's important to remember that this is still a ways out. Typically, voters don't start paying close attention to the race until the fall, really. And though that timeline might speed up a little bit, chiefly because of Donald Trump and the interest he's generated around this race, we're really not going to have a better sense with polls, national polls, until the fall, where that shapes up. And although Sanders is ahead, Clinton is also leading Trump, although by smaller margins. And I think that's exactly right. The superdelegates are looking at this and saying, in a general election, once the Democratic primaries are settled, how would Sanders fare? And the gap between Sanders and Trump right now would probably shrink significantly.
Well, lots more questions for you, gentlemen, but let's go to our listeners. And again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, let's hear from you. We're looking at the disunity among Democrats and how this once very collegial race has turned somewhat bitter. Senator Sanders supporters, as we're hearing, are increasingly upset about the nomination process. Hillary Clinton's campaign has been saying the numbers strongly favor her. It's time to unify. Let's hear from you, Exchange listeners. What do you think of all this? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's go first to Jonathan in Manchester. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I have to laugh at the last comment that Bernie Sanders has not gotten enough negative advertisement against him. Maybe it's not paid advertising, but Hillary Clinton and Brock, David Brock, have spent millions of dollars getting every column commentary column you see in the newspaper. They have people flooding the internet to make negative comments on every article about Bernie. There's been plenty of negative vetting of Bernie Sanders. That's the first point. Secondly, I don't think others talk about party unity. They're not really coming to grips with what young people think. I'm not a young person, but people under 40, about 82% of them who voted Democrat support Bernie Sanders.
You know, this is an important point, Jonathan, that has been brought up a lot. And I think I'll turn to you first, Brendan, but want to hear from everybody. Jonathan's right, Brendan. Hillary Clinton has not been able to capture a very key demographic. Love your thoughts there, Brendan.
It's a remarkable generational divide. I'm not sure we have a recent precedent for how badly she's losing among young people. If it weren't for her strong performance among non-white Democratic primary voters, she would barely get any young people voting for her at all. She's been in national politics for a long time, and in that way has come to represent the past, I think. And so she still stands not just in a general sense for the politics of the 90s and the 2000s, but for an older version of the Democratic Party, especially through her ties to her husband. And she's been forced through this campaign to answer for many of the positions that are now heresies of the Democratic Party for that time. And that makes it hard for young people. The political landscape has changed. She had to, when she got into this race, update her position on immigration, update her position on same-sex marriage. Just being out of the political mix as Secretary of State had left her behind the curve. And she'd been playing catch-up ever since in getting to where the party is, and those young people represent that new generation of folks who aren't playing by the 90s rules politically.
Dante, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a key group to watch going forward as this nomination contest draws to a close are – and Jonathan's right. They're young voters, and they're also voters who tend to self-identify not as Democrats but as independents. And the New Hampshire primary really set the pattern for what was to follow, because if you look at the exit polls from New Hampshire, Clinton and Sanders basically were even among people who self-identified as Democrats. Sanders did a bit better, but it was very close. But among people who self-described as independents, Sanders won by a crushing margin over Hillary Clinton. So, and I taught a lot of these people over the past year at UNH. If you're a young, independent-minded voter – and it winds up being Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, I don't think those voters are choosing between Trump and Clinton. I think they're choosing between Clinton and perhaps staying home and being disgruntled with the whole process. And that's a key group of voters in New Hampshire and other swing states to keep an eye on.
Well, an important point that you make, Dante, that New Hampshire, even though we only have four electoral college votes, I think, it's an important swing state. Those four votes can count.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, certainly, I don't think, you know, there was some talk early on that, well, Donald Trump will scramble the playing field and will have a different kind of set of swing states. I suspect it'll be much more of the same, which would mean New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Ohio, the typical swing states will be key going forward.
Well, a couple Facebook comments, lots of Facebook comments actually coming in. James says, I think Hillary should drop out. The party's in the process of change and folks like her are fighting this change. It's inevitable. And if Hillary and the party try to block this change, Trump will win. So James is saying Hillary's campaign, Dante, will cause Trump to win. Then I've got somebody else who says, Keith says, I think Bernie Sanders is doing a bang-up job of making a Trump presidency more likely. So I wonder what you think, Dante. Here you've got Democrats saying that it's her fault if Trump gets elected or it's his fault if Trump gets elected.
Well, I think it's important to harken back to Brendan's point about 2008. If you go back 8 years ago to this – precisely this time 8 years ago, it was Barack Obama versus Hillary Clinton, and there was all sorts of hand-wringing about how this dispute within the party was going to have a big effect in November. And indeed, at the time, John McCain was running ahead of Barack Obama in head-to-head polling. And it appeared as if, you know, there was all sorts of talk about the bitterness of the primary bleeding over into the general election. But as we know, in 2008, come September, October, Barack Obama gained a lead, never relinquished it against John McCain. So a lot can change. And once the votes are done in California and Jersey and Clinton's the presumptive nominee, the tone could change in an awful hurry.
Well, and Dan Bush and Brendan Nyhan, I want to hear from you on that, too, in just a moment. And we'll take more of your questions and comments. Thanks for those Facebook comments and for that call, Jonathan. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, disunity for Democrats in their presidential nomination, which has turned increasingly negative, even including death threats by some Sanders supporters in Nevada against that state's party chair. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We want your questions, comments, and especially your thoughts about what we're seeing in the Democratic presidential race now. 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour. Dan Bush is with us, digital politics editor for the PBS NewsHour. He joins us from D.C. Brendan Nyhan is in Hanover. He's an assistant professor of government at Dartmouth College. And Dante Scala is in studio, associate professor of political science at UNH, a fellow at UNH's Carsey School, and co-author of the book The Four Faces of the Republican Party. And Brendan, just before the break, I was reading some Facebook comments from listeners who think that if Donald Trump wins, it'll be Hillary Clinton's fault, or if Donald Trump wins, it'll be Bernie Sanders' fault. Now, I'm obviously not going to ask you, you know, whose fault you think it might be, but what do you make of that back and forth?
So the question is, which one of them will be a stronger candidate, or... I'm not sure I actually understand where you're going.
Well, the idea that which one of them right now, can anybody legitimately say that, you know, Hillary would mean Donald Trump's election or Bernie Sanders would mean Donald Trump's election? I mean, can we really even say that at this point?
It's difficult to say. I think Dante was right earlier when he pointed to the fact that Bernie Sanders really hasn't faced a significant negative onslaught. You know, the caller pointed to the kinds of attacks he has faced within the Democratic Party and within the Democratic primary process. But that's nothing like the onslaught he would face in a general election nominee as a general election candidate proposing to replace the entire healthcare system and enact a massive tax increase as a self-proclaimed socialist. We haven't had a presidential candidate like that in the general election in modern times. We really have no precedent for what would happen, but I do think it's hard to imagine a plausible argument that he would be a stronger general election candidate than Hillary Clinton. At the same time, you know, people always have this sort of conversation within primaries about hypotheticals and who would be the stronger candidate. You know, for what it's worth, the political science perspective would also say it probably matters most what the state of the economy is, how popular President Obama is, you know, whether Hillary Clinton can effectively make a case for a third Democratic term, which can often be challenging for an incumbent party. Those kinds of factors often matter most. And to a greater extent than people realize, Hillary Clinton is vulnerable to them and may, you know, a lot of the uncertainty in the race is about those things. But to a larger extent, of course, Donald Trump is the wild card here, and it's hard to say how anybody would match up against him.
Well, here's an email from Rob and a Facebook comment from Joshua, who are both asking a similar question. So I'll share both of these with you. What percentage of disgruntled Sanders supporters who appear to want anything but another Washington insider do your guests think would switch over and vote for either Libertarian Gary Johnson or even Donald Trump? And then Joshua says, I am going to vote for the Libertarian candidate, and I would urge Bernie Sanders supporters to do the same if he doesn't get the nomination. Are you hearing that, Dan Bush, out on the campaign trail from voters? They really, really, really don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. So if Sanders isn't the nominee, they're going to find another way.
I definitely have. It's interesting, you know, going all the way back to Iowa and New Hampshire, you do run into some people who either say that they will stay home on the Democratic side or who say that they will vote for Bernie Sanders supporters, that is, who say they will vote for Donald Trump. And as was mentioned earlier on the show, there are some superficial similarities between the two candidates. They both came at this race sort of bringing an outsider perspective and so on, claiming they were outside of the establishment. But on most issues, trade isn't one of them, but on most issues, there are pretty stark differences. And I think if you look back to 2008, there was similar talk towards the end of the primaries that Clinton supporters were not going to embrace Obama. In the end, of course, as we know, most of them did. So there will certainly be some people like Joshua or the other caller to the show, the Facebook messenger, who said that they will stay home or perhaps vote for Donald Trump. But the majority of Sanders supporters at the end of the day, especially if Sanders embraces Clinton, we don't know to what extent he'll back her, they're going to end up feeling sort of a lot of energy and a lot of interest in making sure Donald Trump isn't president.
Well, and Nicole sent us a Facebook comment as well. She says, I'll be voting Democrat if it's Bernie Sanders on the ticket. Otherwise, Nicole says, I'm going for Trump. What do you think, Dante Scala?
I think a big question is, and Dan got to this, is what does Bernie Sanders want? And does he want to be a spoiler? Does he care about the future of the Democratic Party? Does he think the Democratic Party has a future? Or does he think that the American political system needs to be demolished, at least the party system, and built up again? I mean, he has amassed a large amount of support, a lot of grassroots support. His email list is the envy of every progressive would-be politician in the country. He has a lot of forces behind him, but the question is, once the campaign's over, and it's going to be over sooner rather than later, what then? You know, will he try to bring all these people together to work for a more progressive Democratic Party? But this is someone who's never really been part of the party elite.
Or part of the party at all.
Period. So the question is, where do you go from there, especially knowing the checkered history of third-party movements in this country.
Well, and over the weekend, there was some talk about, you know, among establishment types as to whether Bernie Sanders would be this year's Ralph Nader from way back when, Dante. Just remind us real quick what happened, and then I've got another question on that.
Well, in 2000, we had a contest between, Democrat Al Gore and Republican George Bush, and then Ralph Nader, the consumer advocate, came in as a candidate who ran saying basically Bush and Gore were the same. Nader's widely blamed for essentially getting that few percentage points that tossed the election over to George Bush.
Well, and Bernie Sanders' wife, Jane Sanders, was asked about that in an interview late last week. Here she is talking to Wolf Blitzer. She says her husband won't run as a third-party candidate. Let's hear Jane Sanders.
I think that we've been very clear right from the beginning that we will not play the role of spoiler. The reason that he was active and he decided to run in the Democratic Party was just that. We cannot afford a Republican in the White House. We cannot afford a Republican appointing Supreme Court justices. So Bernie will not be running as an independent. But his political revolution, the political revolution that millions of people are part of, will be a force to be reckoned with, not just in the presidential race, but in the down ticket areas as well.
Again, that's Bernie Sanders' wife, Jane Sanders, talking to Wolf Blitzer about her husband and dampening some speculation that he might run as a third-party candidate. You can join us with your questions and comments on the Democratic presidential race, where it's going right now. Your impressions and thoughts are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. And here's another Facebook comment that I want to ask all of you about. This is from Dan, who says, the process is so clearly corrupted or dysfunctional or rigged or whatever you want to call it, that the delegate counts don't even matter now. The process itself cannot be trusted. Any conclusions or arguments based on it are invalid. Dan says it now only matters who can beat Trump. And if the superdelegates have half a brain, they will read the writing on the wall. This idea that the process is corrupt, we talked about it a little bit earlier, gentlemen, but let's return to it for a minute and just clarify some things. And Brendan Nyhan, to you first, why do you think there is this feeling that the process is corrupt? There's certainly a lot of confusion about how delegates are handed out and so forth.
Well, that's right. It's an opaque process. And so when people are on the losing side, there's often a temptation to attribute it to corruption, even though by any aggregate measure, Clinton is the preference of Democratic voters. If you take national polls, if you take the number of votes cast, et cetera, there's no evidence that this process has been rigged against Sanders. There's lots of small things, but at the macro level, the outcome roughly corresponds to what we'd expect, given the preferences of Democrats who participate in the process or who answer poll questions. So I would chalk this up to the same psychological factors that make people suspicious about the other side stealing the general election when they lose. It's a common sort of process. And this is what's really critical about the moment that Bernie Sanders is in. He has the option right now to tell his supporters, we lost, we fought well, and we lost, and it's time for us to turn our attention to the general election. That's the message that party leaders would like him to offer. Or he can continue to promote suspicion and distrust, as he did allegedly after the incident in Nevada, that was seen as a kind of turning point towards this kind of toxic distrust toward the party among his supporters. So this is going to be a very critical point. And just I want to, if I can make one last point, the contrast here is to someone like Ted Cruz or to Marco Rubio, right, who stepped aside in the Republican race. They may not be enthusiastic Trump supporters, but they're not poisoning the well for the Republican Party either. And that's the kind of worry the Democratic Party leaders have right now about Sanders and his people.
So, Dan Bush, again, trying to clear up some of the confusion around vote totals, and we looked at this in an earlier program on The Exchange. Is there a difference in terms of how clear or unclear the process is between a primary and a caucus, Dan? You know, in a primary, you know, you get X percent and you get X percent. In a caucus, is it different? Or I'm just trying to figure out why there is so much confusion around how delegates are handed out.
Sure. And I think part of the confusion comes from the fact that this is a state-by-state process where each
right.
state has an opportunity to shape the contest as it sees fit. There's no national system. And some states hold primaries. Others hold caucuses. And as we've seen in states that hold caucuses, Sanders has done much better. He's done better in states that hold open primaries where you don't have to be a registered Democrat to vote. And, you know, that's played out around the country. You know, caucuses, states that hold caucuses have gone for Sanders and award their delegates in a number of different ways. So, you know, it's a pretty convoluted process. Going back to the question of whether or not it's rigged. You know, I think that there's a growing awareness among Democrats of the role and the power that the Democratic National Committee and party leaders have in the process in terms of deciding how the convention plays out, who sits on the committees. That's what we saw happen in Nevada with a lot of people being upset that they felt the Sanders supporters were being shut out of the committees that really have a say in what the party platform is going to look like. And this has happened, you know, this has happened for decades. Superdelegates, that superdelegate sort of category was put in place by Democratic Party leaders after Jimmy Carter's loss to Ronald Reagan in 1980, when party leaders wanted to make sure that you know, smaller states and the electorate at large wasn't going to elect what they saw as sort of a weak general election candidate. That swayed control more towards establishment figures like Hillary Clinton, and voters see that. And in Nevada, you know, despite all the ugly rhetoric, the underlying message was, we want more of a say. And that's a legitimate concern, but again, you know, Sanders could address it and say, you know, fundamentally the process is sound and I lost and I'm going to step aside, but by staying on in the race, you know, party leaders have a good argument to make that in fact he's weakening Hillary Clinton going into the general election.
Dante, what do you make of what happened in Nevada and the responses by the campaigns and the party chair on that?
I mean, I think it's been brewing for some time. There's been a lot of tension between the Sanders campaign and the Democratic Party's elite going back months. I mean, we can think back to last year, for example, the whole controversy over how many debates the primary candidates were going to have before Iowa and New Hampshire and when they were going to be held.
Like 5 days before Christmas.
Exactly.
When no one was paying attention. Yeah.
Right. The timing of those and the relative scarcity of debates compared to the Republican side led a number of people, and they weren't just Sanders supporters. I mean, I think a neutral observer could make a very good case that the debates were set up in such a way that they favored a front runner like Hillary Clinton with overwhelming name ID as opposed to, say, a Bernie Sanders or a Martin O'Malley. So there was a sense from the beginning that from Sanders and his supporters that the Democratic Party elite were not creating a perfectly level playing field. Now, that's aside from the delegate rules and so forth. That's just the basically the run-up to the primaries and caucuses
to the actual
themselves.
Voting. Sure.
And this past weekend, Sanders sent out an email to his supporters saying, asking people to contribute money toward Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's the Democratic Party chair. She is up for a primary herself this summer, asking people to support her primary opponent. And so that's – now, again, for all the talk about 2008 being in parallel with 2016, and this will all blow over, that is an unusual measure for a candidate to take to go after the party chair in her own primary.
Well, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz had some thoughts on what she saw as Sanders' response to the upset in Nevada. You know, chairs were thrown, death threats against the chair of the state party and her family. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has felt that Bernie Sanders has not offered a robust enough apology and a message of, hey, pull it back, folks, from his supporters. Let's hear what she had to say.
There is a way to deal with frustration over process, but the fact that the Sanders campaign has issued a but in between condemnation of violence and frustration over the process seems to excuse their supporters' actions, which is unacceptable.
Again, that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And I did want to ask the two of you, too. Brenda Nyhan, you first, please. What do you make about this sort of focus on the party chair herself? Have you seen this before?
It does strike me as unusual. That this is the kind of thing that often happens through back channels. If you feel like you're being mistreated, you might communicate that privately, directly to a party leader or through third parties. But to go after someone publicly to challenge, support their challenger in a primary, that does represent a raising of the stakes. And Sanders, it shows that Sanders is not scared to throw his weight around. And again, I think it's going to raise concerns about how he's going to use the leverage he has and whether his effort to reshape the Democratic Party may effectively promote infighting instead, divide the party, et cetera. At the same time, though, again, this will all settle down. She's in a safe district and is likely to win. Hillary Clinton won her district, if I recall correctly, quite convincingly. So this may be more symbolic than anything else. The relevance to it, though, is the extent to which Sanders doesn't seem to be acting like a team player. And I would just say that one thing we haven't talked about is the carrots and sticks that the Democratic Party can offer Sanders to get him to be a team player. There was a report, I believe, over the weekend that he was making more conciliatory phone calls within the party. And this may be a time when the party is saying to him, you know, here's what your committee portfolio might look like, or here's the kind of opportunities that we might give you to move legislation in the Senate, or whatever it is that they can offer him, or hints at potential sanctions if he doesn't play by the rules. In either case, they're going to be trying to make a deal with him to get him back on board.
Well, we'll talk more in just a moment and take a lot more of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter, too. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're discussing the Democratic presidential race and how this once polite policy heavy contest has turned bitter. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH, Brendan Nyhan, Assistant Professor of Government at Dartmouth College, and Dan Bush, Digital Politics Editor for the PBS NewsHour. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. John joins us from Portsmouth. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling in reference to the texters, emailers, and previous callers who have mentioned that they would either not vote or that they would actually do even worse and go vote for Trump if Bernie Sanders didn't win the primary. And I agree that people who are supporting Bernie Sanders would have all the right in the world to feel their grief, their frustration at losing the primary. But at the same time, I'm certainly hoping that after a short while of reflection, they would realize that by not voting, and or even worse, like I said, by voting for Trump, they would be helping the party that stands for everything that they are clearly against. They would have to think about all the social benefits that have slowly accrued as a result of the Democratic Party's work over the decades. The environmental benefits that the Democratic Party has attempted to fight past the always resistant Republicans, not to mention the big business benefits that the Republicans are always trying to push through.
Well, John, let me jump in if I could. Yeah, John, thank you for the call.
Dig, baby, dig calls from 8 years ago.
Thank you for the call, John. And I did want to ask our guests, and Dan Bush, I think I'll turn to you first, but hear from others. So, Dan, there's John in Portsmouth, and I know you've talked to a lot of voters saying, hey, Democrats, you know, don't vote for Trump, even though you're disappointed that Bernie might not be the nominee. What is the reluctance that you hear, Dan, of Sanders supporters to get behind Hillary Clinton?
Sure. Well, there are several factors. One is certainly the age divide that we mentioned before. Hillary is losing younger voters, people under 30, under 25, in historic numbers. It's important to remember, though, that young voters typically vote for the person they see as the outsider anti-establishment candidate, regardless of who that candidate is. We've seen that going as far back as the 60s, if not earlier, when younger liberals got behind McGovern's opponent in 72, got behind McCarthy in 68, and so on. So there's that. And also sort of in line with that, the frustration or the reluctance from Sanders supporters to get behind Clinton, I think, has to do with a larger sort of rift that's also been in the party for a long time between people who want to see incremental change and people who really want to see sort of broader, faster-moving reforms that shake up the system, so to speak. And Sanders is his policies would change the political landscape, would change the economy, would change the structure of our social service system faster than Clinton if he were elected, if he could get his changes through Congress. And of course, that's a big if because it's pretty unlikely. And so people who want to see that change happen faster and who feel that Hillary Clinton's policies are not as drastic feel a reluctance to get behind somebody like that, and I'm seeing that around the country. And of course, the question is, you know, is the perfect enemy of the good? And would you rather have Donald Trump in the White House if you're a Democrat, or somebody like Hillary Clinton, who might not get there as fast as Sanders on some of these policy issues, but would move the ball forward, as the last caller suggested?
Dante, go ahead.
Yeah, I think to John's point, a month is a lifetime in presidential politics. A month ago, 6 weeks ago, the Republican Party was going to come apart at the seams. There was, you know, it was never Trump forever, the contested conventions and so forth. And now there's at least, if not excitement, there's at least a quiet resignation among Republicans and a determination that Hillary Clinton shouldn't be the next president of the United States. And so a lot can change in a month, especially once the contests are over. And political parties have a way of mending themselves as people unite. But no question within the Democratic Party, though, if Clinton is the next president, it'll be interesting to see how she copes with people in her own party, because I don't think Sanders voters are going anywhere. And arguably, they're the future of the Democratic Party, given the stark age divide between Sanders supporters and Clinton supporters.
Are the Sanders voters sort of like, Dante, the Tea Party of the Democratic Party? You know, initially when the Tea Party started building up in 2009 and 2010, establishment Republicans said, great, look at all this energy, look at all these voters. And then they didn't do what the establishment wanted all the time. They didn't fall in line with, you know, people like Speaker Boehner and so forth. Are we seeing the same thing now on the Democratic side?
Yeah, I think that's plausible in the sense that, you know, the Tea Party didn't basically try to colonize the Republican Party and make it more like them rather than striking off on their own. And the question for Sanders Democrats will be, will they work from within the party, try to promote progressive candidates in primaries, Mrs. Sanders said, right, down ticket in congressional races and so forth? Will there be more Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders supporters in 4 or 6 years in Congress than there are now? I think that's a big question for the future that could help to shape a Clinton administration, if that indeed happens.
Well, lots more people who want to jump into our conversation, gentlemen. And let's go to Marie in Dover. Hi, Marie. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you. One thing that I've observed is that people seem to regard Senator Sanders as a Democrat. He became a Democrat shortly before the New Hampshire primary. He's never actually been a Democrat. And although he's caucused with the Democrats and voted with them, so it's no surprise he doesn't want to play by Democratic rules. And I think that for the same reason, he's attracted a lot of voters who may or may not be Democratic voters. So I think that this is going to indeed be a very interesting election, because we don't know who the heck the new voters he pulled in are. They may have been budding Republicans. And as for some of the older voters who may have been previously registered and long participants in the political process, I think that a segment of them, just a small segment, this is no characterization of the Sanders supporters in general, do display a streak of misogyny that came out in Nevada and, you know, might be a kind of response to their disappointment that first, we elected a black president. God, now are we going to elect a woman?
Are you? I want to ask you about the misogyny thing for sure, Marie. But you said you think some of these new Sanders people might be budding Republicans. Would they vote for universal health care?
I think that some of the new Sanders voters, you know, people for whom this is a first election, and who are relatively unsophisticated in voting, we don't really know who they are. In New Hampshire, you can go in and take any ballot. You know, you don't have to, you can switch back and forth. For some people who go in for the first time, they're registering for the first time. They figure, I can register as this and I can change back.
So there's it's definitely harder to pin down, and some political turmoil there for sure. Getting to her other comment, and I think I'll turn to you, Dan Bush, on this, because you've been around the country covering the election. Okay, I know what Marie is referring to. There were death threats against the Nevada State Party chair and a lot of nasty comments to her, email, Facebook, calling her some misogynistic words that I'm obviously not going to use on the radio. Have you heard from female voters that they feel some misogyny from the other side? And let's say right up front that young women are definitely going for Bernie Sanders, so they don't feel that. But go ahead, Dan. This is a toughie. Marie, thank you for calling.
Yeah, it's a very good point. I was actually going to raise. I'm glad Marie brought it up. The answer, in short, is yes. I've spoken to women, actually wrote a piece about this recently, I think during the New York primary. There are a lot of women who support Hillary Clinton who have told me that they feel uncomfortable sharing their support for her publicly, whether it's on Facebook with their group of friends, in their workplace, or outside of it, because of the backlash, because of Sanders supporters who have aggressively sought to not only discredit Hillary Clinton's policies and campaign, but the people who support them. It's a dynamic that played out in 2008 as well when Hillary was running. There's a gender likability issue that has come up that came up with Clinton in 2008 when President Obama famously said that Hillary was likable enough. Sanders supporters have played into that trope as well, and gender is an issue. And I think that what we're going to see moving forward is, in fact, a lot of excitement around Hillary Clinton from women, from female voters, once she clinches the nomination. This is going to be a historic moment for the country when we have our first female nominee of a major party. And once that happens, I think that there's going to be a sense of people, perhaps like Marie, the last caller, who feel more comfortable expressing that support. But right now, especially because of the tenor of the campaign, because of the so-called Bernie bros who sort of troll Clinton supporters online, there's a lot of trepidation from women supporters of Hillary Clinton, and the misogyny claims are founded.
Dante, jump in, then I have another question for you, Brendan. Go ahead, Dante.
Yeah, thinking forward to the general election, I mean, Brendan mentioned earlier, like, one of the big what-ifs is we've never seen a candidate like Donald Trump before, and, you know, how does that play out? Well, the other thing we haven't seen before is we have, a female as a major party nominee, and how does that play out among the electorate? I mean, will there be some kind of gender penalty, so to speak? In other words, that Clinton might run behind a typical Democrat because voters won't vote for a woman, or at least some won't. We don't know the answer to that going forward. We can look to other races perhaps for Senate or Congress, but we haven't seen it at the presidential level. So that's yet another factor kind of thrown into the mix besides the usual things like the state of the economy.
Well, and Brendan, Dan said once she clinches the nomination, Sanders people listening are probably thinking, wait a second, hold on, there's still more contests. So is this a done deal, Brendan? I mean, looking at the delegate math and so forth.
Everything we can imagine happening, outside of something truly extreme would suggest that she will be the nominee. It's a difficult thing. I sympathize. You know, I grew up in California, and we always came so late in the process that we never got to participate when the decision was actually being made. It's disheartening to hear that the outcome is preordained before everyone's had a chance to participate. But the math is what the math is. And ultimately, though, I think people are going to take a different frame of mind, especially also as people within the party who to this point have stayed on the sidelines start to call more aggressively for unity. One thing we haven't talked about is the kinds of third parties who might be credible to both Clinton supporters and Sanders supporters. So, for instance, Elizabeth Warren has been quite careful in how she's positioned herself during this primary. One of her aides said today in an article that she might be the beneficiary of the way that Bernie Sanders supporters have changed the party. And she's, I would imagine, going to come out very aggressively in favor of Clinton when she wins the nomination, and would be someone who could help rally Sanders supporters to her side. Similarly, Bill Clinton might be more persuasive. You can imagine a series of figures who will be appealing to those folks and who ultimately will bring a lot of them back into the fold.
So Senator Warren coming out strongly for Hillary Clinton, Brendan, eases the sting for Bernie Sanders supporters. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. People are often looking for or open to, when even if they don't realize it, the kind of message that reminds them where they ultimately stand. That's what the general election process does. It reminds people which side they're on. And that's why we've often seen people falling into line. For instance, after Al Gore's speech in 2000, when he was underperforming among Democrats, he got a big convention bounce. And basically what that did is it just reminded people, oh, yeah, you're on his side. That's the side you usually vote for. And I think Elizabeth Warren and people like her will connect with voters with that kind of a message as the general election moves forward. We're actually not that far from the convention, right? So there will be this giant week-long show of party unity, assuming Sanders folks don't freak out, that will again serve the purpose of reminding people we're in this together and we're going to beat Trump. That'll be the message for the entire week, and they will trot every single person out who can bring the different factions of the party together.
Well, and Dan Bush, as I understand, as soon as you get off the air with us, you're heading back out to the trail, so we really appreciate you taking the time. Where are you heading next, and what are you expecting?
Sure. So I'll be in Pennsylvania and Ohio, two swing states, obviously, and important ones this election, as they always are. And I'll be speaking with voters, particularly with men, about sort of their perceptions of Hillary Clinton and trying to get at, root out the gender bias or discrimination that exists in politics and what role it'll play once, assuming Hillary is the nominee. And we've seen, Hillary do well, as Dante mentioned, with minority voters. She's done very well with women. The one group that she's had trouble historically with are white men, working class whites in particular. And so Ohio and Pennsylvania, where there are a lot of voters who fit that category, it'll be interesting to see how it is that they'll adjust to Clinton being the nominee and how they'll make the decision between Clinton and Trump in a general election.
Okay. And Dan, those are states that have voted already in primaries.
Correct.
But you're talking about the general election. You're going to be heading to California June 7th. That's the big prize.
It is. It definitely is. And that's where the race will be decided, I think, in a couple weeks now.
Okay. Last question to throw at you real quick, Dante Scala. Real quick. Robert Epsom wants to know whether Bernie Sanders would accept the vice presidency if offered and whether Hillary would make the offer.
I think the answer is no. And no.
All right. Robert, thank you for the email. And all of you, thank you so much. I know you're busy. Really appreciate you being here. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jessica Hunt. Our intern is Araz Havan. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.